Okay. I was just reviewing in my mind the fact that I can keep the Sabbath day holy, don't have to purchase anything on Sunday, which is always a good thing. Do it on some other day if you can. And I'm Jason Nemiro, and you're listening to Cohen Meanderer. That's me, and I am meandering today, actually. I'm kind of taking care of something that came up, and it just ended up kind of only working to do it today, which is kind of sad. Don't know if it's exactly ox in the mire, but something has to get done during daylight, transporting the boat, Reunion, my sailboat, over to the property I have in French, and in preparation for sleeping in it again. The place I had in Amarillo that I was staying at, at Woods Inn, which was the cheapest place I could find, $5.50 a month, about lost my sanity, just saying, oh my gosh, is that the cheapest there is? And apparently it was. So I've only stayed there for just slightly over a month. And I'm pardon me. So I bought that quarter acre of property over at French, near French, near the lake, Lake Meredith, and I am I'm getting everything pulled together to put the boat out there. Eventually, my dad came up with this, and it's kind of, I don't know if it's a blessing or a bad thing. It's going to cost me more than normal. Now, normal for me is on the order of 10 or 12 or $30 a month, as opposed to 550. Trading him the boat for an RV, and so I'm getting ready for that eventuality. And the situation is that this will actually work pretty good, I think. And I'll probably be able to park it and just leave it there, bring water to it, and dump out gray water on the trees. Don't go to the bathroom in it particularly. And that's kind of what I've kind of pulled together here in the last little bit. Had some intermediate moments when it was like, well, I need to get this done. I wonder how many times I'm going to be talking about this in the recordings before it's just like, well, it's done. Now I don't need to talk about it anymore. Always a little bit to talk about when it comes up to living situations, stuff like that. So I'm going back to kind of being the voice of the wilderness again. French Texas is kind of a civilized version of the wilderness, but I'm outside of town. There's not really, I continue to get little snippets out of my Book of Mormon reading, my incredibly slow, gradual Book of Mormon reading. And Moroni now, we're kind of, well, no, you know what? I don't think we're quite out of, no, we are out of Mormon now. Now we're doing Moroni. He does the last little bit of the Book of Mormon, the little Book of Mormon, before he tacks on Esther, not Esther, Ether, Guy. And then his own book of Moroni. And he is taking somewhat the theme of his father And I know it's hard. I mean, people just breeze through this. So they don't get the general gist of how hard both Mormon and Moroni are on the wicked, and how much you need to be obedient so that you can be on the right hand of God. So for a different, you know, for some of the way you talk about it, you know, the right hand of God's the good side, left hand's the bad side. And how it will go, you don't hear a lot about the bad things that are going to happen to the wicked, the fact that they're going to suffer and be punished. Not only in this life, but in the spirit prison to come. And people don't like talking about that. You know, it's like, oh, no, you're fine. Everything's fine. And to be honest, it's that I tend to be a person that doesn't, you know, I hate confrontation. At every point, I'm not into confrontation. Ooh, somebody's got a little bit of a boat here. It looks like one of those knee boats, one of those kayaks, maybe, the back of somebody's truck. So yeah, it's not the sailboat like I've got. Now I got to put that whole thing back together again. Anyway, that's okay. I really don't have a lot to talk about today. Which I know, it's like, oh, come on, he always has something to talk about. Spent a Saturday going to see some movies that Mom wanted to see. And it went pretty good. You know, of course, now it puts me in the circumstance of having to move the boat and not only distract me from, you know, more traditional Sunday activities, but also somebody else. I feel bad about that. These are my friends who, it's a work friend that I have in Amarillo. I just happened to bring up some stuff. He said, hey, I can help you with that. It's like, oh, great. So he's going to help me with that today, moving the boat. And what a blessing that is. I was really kind of wondering how I was going to get that accomplished, not have it be kind of a pain in the butt for anybody. And he was like, oh, it's no pain in the butt at all, you know. And it's like, oh, okay, great, cool, thank you. To be a service. And you know, I feel weird being what I am and how much money, frankly, I make. And people having to serve me, I don't get into that. You know, it's like I'm not a person that needs service too much. At least not of this sort. I could go and I could get a truck and I could move this thing, and it cost me a little bit, but it's not like I don't have the money to do it. However, there it is. So anyway, that's all there. Holly, that's all there really is to say. I don't have a lot to do on this recording, although I could try to stretch it out a little bit. I'm trying to think of something I've watched or listened to lately. The whole situation with BYU and the fact that it's getting kind of woke. And it's like, I don't think this happened all of a sudden. I think it has attracted certain left-leaning elements, both outside the church and in the church. A lot of young people who did what they were supposed to do. Their parents sent them off to the Lord, quote, the Lord's University. You're like, oh, I have to hear about that weirdness. What's this? It's rock. Anyway, and then they came back with all these weird ideas, and some of them even kind of abandoning the church over it, for saying, you know, the church is patriarchal and run by a bunch of old white men and stuff like that. And it's, well, got sunflower seeds today. So we're getting a little rancid, so I'm going to take care of those. And BYU trying to straddle the academy and the gospel is getting more and more, I don't know, difficult. So, if it was in my hands to really handle what was going on, I would be prepared to jettison large aspects of Brigham Young University in order to, it's almost, you know, you almost get the feeling it needs to be a cleansing, you know. For a long time, there was kind of an attitude that the priorities of the academy needed to take precedence over the concerns of the gospel. And it just over time grew and grew. We would get more and more secular professors, you know, and pat ourselves on the back and say, boy, aren't we so open-minded? Open-minded is how the devil gets you. One of his favorite ways to destroy the intellectual class, the people who think they're smart. I think it's interesting, especially in Scripture, most of the writings that we have come from, in the Book of Mormon, a lot of them come from warriors. These are not the intelligent people. You know, you don't get really good grades, then you go into the military. You just don't do that. The great leaders of the Book of Mormon don't appear to have been, or in the Old Testament particularly, didn't appear to be a kind of interesting professional college-trained general class. These were warriors that had distinguished themselves in battle. And were followed because of their prowess and the fact that they were godly men, prophets. We don't have those these days. Our military is basically run by an intelligentsia in a uniform with some stars on their collars. Most of which have never seen battle, ever. So, anyway. Jesus was an interesting figure. The leaders he chose, I don't know if they had any idea that they were going to be leaders. The leaders that he chose were not from the intelligentsia. In fact, completely not. Just as far as we understand, most of them from somewhat humble occupations. Jesus himself was this sort of a man as well. Although he appeared to be somewhat learned, a rather down-to-earth guy, Christ was. So, you know, something to look at in the Book of Mormon. Nephi and Lehi were not scriptorians. Obviously, they had to get what scriptures could be procured. They had to. They had to, I don't know if y'all steal them. Kind of. Actually, I think that's just completely true. Tried to get them asking, tried to get them buying. Couldn't be had. Killing and stealing. Very interesting concept right there at the beginning of the Book of Mormon. All done at God's behest. Nephi wouldn't have done it if God hadn't forced him to, practically. Amazing. Amazing. And most of the Book of Mormon, especially after Jacob, after the small place of Nephi, was mostly about missionary work and war. And the missionary work isn't a big, vital part of it. We moved from being a nation that had a national faith, the Nephite nation, and the combined Nephite-Mulekite nation, and then we had kind of a branch that went wicked. People of Limhi under his son Noah concept of what we would think of as a church actually happened in the days of Noah when the government was wicked, very bad, and one needed a different structure under which the gospel could be promulgated. We already had several Nephite cities who were getting wicked, had become wicked, rejected God. Now that's usually where, I don't know if it could qualify as intelligentsia, but it was mostly through persuasion. I don't know how much argument there was, but it was certainly persuasion and cunning that these people would do these things. And a growing number of our intelligentsia, the people divided by rank, more made quite clear, done by how much learning someone had. And you go, well, that's an interesting way to look at it. Separating people into different classes. Which I guess had never really been a thing, but it became a thing shortly before Christ came to the Americas. Mormon made a particular mention of it, and this was happening. And for my part, I feel like the modern analog of this is the university educated. The more educated you become, the more of a tendency there is for you to start pulling away from rejecting God and Christ. It's very sad. Well, this is a huge change from President Hinckley, who himself was not a highly educated man, or a man of business. But pull everybody to get as much education as you can. Our current first presidency are very educated men. Most of our apostles Well, the great majority of them have advanced degrees. Although I'm not sure of the recent batch, to be honest. Many of our older prophets were kind of a little sketchy about an academic education. I think they felt like being skilled tradesmen or artisans was far more important. I'm a guy that's really quite highly of that over the scholarly. So, yeah, I have to be honest that my education went more along the lines of the philosophical than, like, say, for instance, my brother Joe's, which is far more a skill set. Accountancy and then auditing. These were, you know, these are just as much a trade as being a plumber or an electrician or something like that. A physician is very much on the same kind of thing. Like I've always said, a good physician, basically, either they go into research or they become just excellent. Technicians. Are you doing this surgery right? Are you a good diagnostician? Which is basically a technical field. So Russell Nelson has far more a technical background than an intellectual one, which for me is a point in his favor. Me, I do technical work, but I'm quite philosophical about it. I don't know, you know, I would, in the position of having to determine BYU's ultimate path forward, I would tend to eschew science. There still is a lot to have to be said about Latter-day Saints being in a wide variety of different fields. Pardon me, but to do a better job of instead of being kind of a regional school, there seems to be an awful lot of having to pander, I'm sorry, I'll say it, to certain families. You know, this was an important BYU professor, all their kids will go to school here, you know, and we give them this and that, this and that. And it's more about being an Ivy League school for certain prominent Latter-day Saint families. Can I be honest, to be kind of a prep school so that they can go to more prestigious places? I got my bachelor's degree at BYU, but I got my master's and my PhD at Harvard and Princeton. And at BYU, for certain, you know, and that these people are more apt to get future professorships at BYU as, you know, what do you call them in sororities? Legacy? And if they go off the rails, gospel-wise, you have to do so carefully so as not to upset the boat. But that this stuff was really quite, you know, it's become a class thing or a rank thing. If you have a hankering to be a general authority, the best thing to do, besides being the son of a general authority, is to have gone to BYU, to have gone from BYU on to some prestigious secular university, been successful in business, and then, yeah, it said there's a really reasonable chance that you're going to be made a general authority at some point. The general authorities are the middle managers of the church. I know that sounds bizarre. You don't like to think of this as a business, but well, the church operates a lot as a business. And you have to know that the brethren have their circle that they deal with. They have the people that they get to know. And sometimes they will let some other people in. It's not an exclusive club completely, but how do you get to know each other? Family gatherings, stuff like that, reunions. I was interested about stories. Garrett W. Gong talks about stories, a story that an apostle married he and his wife. And you're going, who is Garrett Gong that he would get that? He seems like he's just this dude. You know, not that he's not accomplished on some level. He's fine that way. But it's like, who is his wife? Who does his wife come from? What's going on here? And you get to know after a while that this is going on. Now, like I said, I'm not sitting here and saying this is bad or wrong. It's just an interesting trend that one sees. I think Elder Suarez and Elder Uchtdorf are somewhat unique in that they didn't have a particular end. What's interesting is they were fully developed outside of Utah. They didn't come to Utah. They didn't have Utah ties or background until they were called to the 70. And they had to move. They had to move into town. So I'm not saying it's exclusive. I'm not saying it's unique. It's interesting, though, how these people work and what you see. And it's like, you know, people get the idea that there is a ton of inspiration going on this, and I am not saying there is not. From the pool that they choose from, those who become apostles are inspired. You have to understand, Jesus pulled from groups that he knew, that he met along the way, that he invited to the inner circle. He didn't get a name and go find them 1,000 miles off and say, you are this guy. Not that it couldn't have happened, but he didn't, it seems like. Like I said, is this a bad thing? No. Does it make people in the church struggle? Probably, if they look at it. It gives much good fodder for the detractors of the church to say, oh my gosh. when they accuse the church of being a patriarchy, of being a group of old white men that kind of hang out together and like each other and have for quite some time, the detractors of the church have a point. Is it, you know, one could easily say, well, it's an old boys club, and you go, well, you know, I can't say that's not honest. Is this out of character with how Christ would have done it? And the basic answer I have to give is no. It's not. So, as another thing, you go, oh, it's Jason Nemro apostatizing from the church because of the things he sees that aren't fair, that aren't right. You're going, it's not a question of fair or right. Christ gets to choose his apostles. The current apostles get to choose, get to be very much a part of who's part of that short list of people they may be considering. And you go, you know, are they going to get people they like? Are they going to get people they work with? If there's a certain need and they want that need to be addressed, is that part of the decision-making process? I wouldn't be surprised if it was. I'm sure too many people think that the whole of the church membership gets dumped into some goblet of fire, and that they all wait for Christ to blast a name out of there that gets caught by the current prophet, and he goes, and the name is la 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 la, and you go, oh, who's that? We don't know who that is. And then you have to go through the church record and figure out who that person is. Hopefully, you put that on there so that it's unique. You know, if it's Juan Gonzalez, we have a problem. A lot of Juan Gonzalez's in the church. So how this stuff happens. And you don't get too weird about it. It's very important not to get too strange about it. But it's interesting. Now, the interesting part is that BYU, to a large extent, kind of mirrors that, but not necessarily taking anything into account for what God might desire. And so it becomes, how can we attract the most prestigious scholars to our school, you know, one that's going to get picked up by one of the other schools. I can't think but what some college dean at BYU considers it a personal victory when they can snap up somebody who was probably in line to be hired by Harvard or you know, Oxford or Cambridge or one of the elite schools, and said, wow, I got to come here to Provo, Utah. And it was a hard sell because Provo, Utah is not an impressive place. You know, it doesn't sing like Cambridge does or Oxford as being a great seat of learning, and everybody kind of treats each other wonderfully. In light of what's been happening at BYU, Lisa and I don't give money to BYU anymore. Quite sad. We haven't quite made a decision about BYU Idaho yet. We both attended BYU Idaho at different times, and both when it was Rick's College, a two-year school. My wife graduated from there. I just attended the semester there before my mission. And I tell you, if it's got the BYU imprint on it, my tendency is to avoid it. And I know that's tough for Latter-day Saints to hear. How dare you not give money to BYU? what kind of apostate are you? And I said, I'm the guy that says, I would rather the kids went to someplace else where they would be able to retain their religion. Because BYU is starting to become not that kind of a place. And the brethren have chirped up about it. You would say, oh, you're just, no. You're just off the rails. It's like, is Jeffrey Holland off the rails? He spoke very carefully. He spoke as a former president of BYU and as a person now with responsibilities over BYU about what did, and boy, let me tell you, he got some serious blowback for that. And you're going, wow, it's the apostle of Jesus Christ at a school funded by the Church of Jesus Christ. Why on earth is he going to get blowback about anything? But he did. Absolutely amazing. Well, I'm glad you decided to speed up. So yeah, I feel like I'm out in the weeds crying like an idiot? No. No, it's been noted. It's been noted by people of prominence. And so, I'm not an anti-intellectual. I think I'm a person who is not interested particularly in the intelligentsia. I am not an academic. Nor very interested, nor very impressed by academics. I think the Book of Mormon does much to speak out against this sort of a thing. You can say, well, in the church, we don't tell people if they can go to the church school or not. You go, well, we have enough campuses now. We have three main campuses at BYU. Well, two. Utah and Idaho. There is a campus out at Hawaii, which is a very interesting school. My brother Joe taught for a time at BYU Hawaii. And I, you know, whatever. Very much something that needs to be considered. Jewry has, I think, been absolutely slaughtered by an intelligentsia and a concept that's Jewry's biggest contribution to humanity is, you know, being very smart. Many Jews would struggle to be cultural Jews. Many Jews don't even believe in God. What is the phrase? Draw near to me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. That's Jewish. Even devout Jews. Apparently you can be a devout Jew and not believe in God at all. A devout Judaism is doing all the performances, reading all the books, passing all the tests. Judaism bears a lot more in common with study of the law, a juris doctorate. your local rabbi and your local lawyer probably have a lot more in common than probably should be decent. I am not a Jew. My family left the Jewish faith. Wow. My great-grandfather, Joseph, wanted to be a successful military man. And he pretty much left his Jewishness behind him for the sake of being able to get into West Point. I don't know how his ultimate military success went. I don't think he stayed in very long. I think he did other things. He died rather young and very much, I feel like, very much with mental illness. And this has been something that remains in the family. It's not helpful that my father, which came from mental illness background, married my mother, who came from a mental illness background. I got a double portion. My brother and I got double portions of this. And I'm really grateful for my wife's love. I hope I speak for my brother and his gratitude for his wife. Anyway, so how does this stuff all come back to BYU is a whole other question. And how does it fit in with scripture that we have? And we do have scripture that talks about get all the learning that you can. And it's got, you kind of get snifters of geology, anthropology, political science in there. It's all somewhat in there. So it's good that the church has, the church organized a college, higher education. I think we're doing a bad job of in inculcating a gospel perspective in with it. I think that has mostly been shoved aside in favor of BYU being prestigious. Having a very high performance sports program, which has absolutely nothing to do with any of this stuff. I see no indication in scripture of the importance of football, basketball, any of these things. I just don't. But yet, how much money is spent doing this? How much money is, you know, it's the whole thing. Oh, we've got our boosters. You know, we get a whole lot of money for doing this from prominent members of the church who played sports for BYU. Probably beyond the ranking of the programs. Anyway, so these things make me wonder. I'm not in a position to care about any of this stuff. And if I ever got put in the position of caring about this stuff, I wonder exactly what I would do. I'm not sure. But I might be the guy that says, okay, this ends. Oh, but there's kids that won't come to the school. I said, fine, they don't come to the school. Well, we're going to lose them. And you go, I don't care if we can field a good football team. I don't care. Other things are more important. Gracious. I have children who spouted the words in their youth while they were in my house. And as soon as they felt comfortable enough that they didn't have to do what Lisa and I said, to believe the way that we believed, thought we were doing a pretty decent job inculcating the gospel in these kids. And it's been kind of sad to see a few of them, of the six, two have, the other four, I'm feeling pretty good about that these people are, you know, that as soon as they got out from under us, they just walked away. And I mean walked away. One of my children is I have a documented harangue of doing all this, and that the child doesn't like me. And it's like, I don't think much of you. If you come around here needing help or stuff like that, I don't know exactly how I will behave. My preference would be to see in sackcloth and ashes, coming before the Lord and saying, you know, I'm trying to put my life back together again. I said, oh, that's good. I'm glad. You know, can you help me a little bit? You go, let's proceed carefully about that. So, yeah, you go, whoa, you're a bad person now, bro. And you go, fine, you can be that way if you want to. You can coddle the Antichrist. I'm sure the Savior will pat you on the head and say how wonderful you are. Not the Antichrist, but a Antichrist. There's plenty of them. Said, I'm just not exactly excited that one of them came from my loins. That doesn't make me happy. And everybody who says, well, you better treat them really, really, really good or they'll never come back. And you go, I am not going to be held hostage from somebody saying, boy, Dad better treat me good or I'm not going to be nice to him. And you go, you need to honor your father and your mother. There's no commandment going the other way. None. Zero. I did my job in raising you and raising you in the gospel. You abandoned it and didn't just abandon it, but you have pretty much said that, you know, you've tried to get other people to abandon it too. You go, I don't know what your fate is going to be. But you need to straighten out. You need to straighten out and get back in formation and fly better. And I'm not a guy that really flies in formation either. But I'm not rejecting God. I'm not rejecting Christ. I'm not rejecting Joseph Smith as a prophet. I'm not rejecting the current brethren. I'm not rejecting them. They're wonderful. I follow them. They are trying to help me and others get back to Christ. Differences? There will be some. Do I necessarily agree with everything they say? No. But am I going to speak against them? No. So, anyway, tricky thing. It's a tricky thing down BYU way. And I don't know exactly how they are going to handle it. I think it's very important to the brethren that BYU is basically Latter-day Saint Harvard. At least on undergraduate level. And they're exposed to a variety of ideas, even to the exclusion, this is the sad part, even to the exclusion of gospel teaching. I don't know if they have, you know, when I went to school there, every semester you had to take some sort of religion class. Now, there are religion classes, there are religion classes. Some of them are very oddball, taught by oddball people that really, you know, are really not really doing much gospel-wise. But yet it can count. I think you can reasonably get through your entire undergraduate career. And that's sad to say that that's considered a career. But you can get through your entire undergraduate degree and probably have avoided any kind of substantive gospel instruction or being able to get these things from a person who actually is devoted to the gospel. I think that's doable now, and I think it's getting more doable as time progresses. You know, people are if you taking one of these classes and you can get one that's kind of easy, I don't know if that's a Book of Mormon class taught by some professor or another, if it's done in a big arena. So this is tough. Anyway, so it's 3:15 in Texas. I gotta get my move out though. I need to go ahead and let this go. And this does not come from anything but what I've heard and from what my basic impressions are. You know, and you can say, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. You go, well, it says, that's fine, you know. I come from the land of impressions. And my impression is, I'm not unhappy that my kids didn't end up going to BYU. I'm not concerned at all. I'm not, you know, I find it interesting that I probably could have gone on a full scholarship to BYU. I didn't know that. I was told, or at least I heard different things. And I didn't go to school there. I didn't think I had the right high school career to make it happen. I got 4-year full ride scholarships to several other places, and I didn't take any of them. Sadly, I tried to take one to Texas Tech University, and that one didn't work out for whatever reason. I don't understand why it did, but it didn't. Except to say it's probably just as well, because now I'm not some kind of intelligentsia guy. I'm really not. And I'm kind of glad, honestly, that I wasn't. I make my money doing technical work as a technician. I don't think I'm even a particularly great one or a good one, particularly. But I do, you know, I do my job. I try to do a good job of what I do. Need to slow down now. I'm actually in Amarillo. And so, yeah, this is, how do I feel about BYU? Not much. My wife had more of a BYU, Ricks College sort of experience. And she got her associate in arts in interior design. And she doesn't do much interior design now. And that's not to say that she wasn't good at it. She was good at it. She helped other people who went on to successful interior design careers get through the program. She was that good. But I guess she just didn't have, it just wasn't her. And it didn't have the contacts, can I be honest? A lot of this stuff has to do with having the right contacts and being with the right people. And she just didn't have that. So it just didn't happen. And anyway, so I got to let you go. It's Jason Demerol. You're listening to Cohen Meanderer. Let me leave you with the priestly blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord raise his face, his countenance to shine upon you and bring you peace.